Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's Angel, and I was here with Tami San for Tea with Tami San, and I'm so happy that you had me on your show. Thank you.
Yo guys, this is a fresh episode of Tea with Tay, and I have a super fantastic guest on my couch. She's a reality star, a businesswoman, an influencer.
A podcaster.
Yeah.
A writer.
We're the podcaster, babe.
We're working on it.
I love it. My guest is Angel of BBN, Angel Smith of Big Brother Nigeria. Please put your hands together for my guest. The youngest to ever do it. How are you, baby girl?
I'm all right. We thank God.
Finally on my couch.
Yes. I'm so excited.
You look very well ready for this couch. Are you ready to give me what I'm ready for?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, let's go. Let's talk about your life before BBN. Because, I mean, like, you clearly look like you grew up fast. And what was life like before Big Brother? Tell me about growing up.
I think it was really chaotic growing up, you know. Mm-hmm. I went to like the strictest missionary school. You know, the standard for, you know, education there was very high. I think our A was in 96 or in 97, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, and I also grew up with my granny because, you know, everybody knows my parents had me really, really early. Yeah. And my granny and I didn't really get along. So, mm-hmm. I was out of the house once I was 17. I dropped out.
So, where did you go?
At the time I had just gotten an admission into UNILAG.
Right.
So I stayed in UNILAG for 2 weeks and I was just like, yeah, no. So I basically had to hustle by myself. I started writing for people and they would pay me like all these little breadcrumbs that I used to survive while being out of my granny's house. And I actually cannot remember how I navigated my life from there, but we thank God that we're here today.
I grew up with my granny too. Not like we got along every other time, but we really got along though. Why didn't you get along with your granny?
I feel like I'm not like the conservative Nigerian.
Yeah.
Like the average Nigerian is pretty conservative, yeah. Especially the women.
Yeah.
But I'm not a conservative person. My personality just clashes with like the Nigerian culture. And my personality used to clash a lot with my granny's, who is a very strict Christian.
Right.
So we would clash often, you know, and I was chapel prefect in my high school from year 8, actually.
Because it was a missionary school.
Yes.
In Lagos here.
Yes, Marywood. I was a chapel prefect from year 8 till I graduated the school.
So you're a good girl.
In some sense, yes.
Yeah.
I would like to think I am.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of like expression, yeah. Not so much.
So they didn't understand you.
She didn't really understand me, and she didn't understand like when I was struggling as well, because like I said, I didn't grow up with my parents and I don't think they realized how much that affected me growing up as a child, and I had to be with my granny. So, you know, I would say that I started experiencing like my, you know, mental health related issues,
yeah.
Like from when I was little, like I started self-harming like when I was like 12 or something, and I was already writing by then.
Wow. I'm going to come to your mental health.
Yeah.
Issue, but let's talk about your parents.
Huh?
Let's talk about your parents. Like, yeah. Why were they not in the picture? Why did your granny have to raise you?
Well, my mom had me when she was like 16, I think.
Same,
16 or 15. And yeah, my granny, my dad had me early as well.
Yeah.
So obviously my mom had to fend for herself and my parents weren't, I mean, my dad engaged my mom, but like, I don't know what happened. I never asked. They just broke up. And you know, it was hard. My dad's family never wanted me. You know, 2019 was when they died. They never saw me. Like, I don't know what they look like actually. I can't tell you what my dad's parents look like. So, you know, they had to fend for themselves. They were still children as well while raising a child. So my granny just took me. My mom left Nigeria. She started living in Ghana. I can't really tell where my dad was at the time.
Yeah.
You know, I was a child, so everything is still pretty sketchy. I just had to be raised with my granny, who was more reliable, and she had just come back from London by then. So she just raised me, basically. She was more, you know, up to the task, seeing as she had two kids of her own.
Yeah. Let's talk about Unilag. I think we both have experiences from Unilag, but I'm very interested in your own experiences from Unilag.
You know, I was in Unilag for only 2 weeks, and I feel like I got like a lot of healing after Big Brother, because after Big Brother, my granny apologized to me. My granny has never apologized to me before. But you know, I struggled so much for those 2 weeks, because when I got into Unilag was my, you know, first sexual assault experience. And, you know, like that, I still vividly, I can't remember his face. You know how your brain has a way of like wiping things that are so traumatic.
Yeah.
I can't remember his face, but like, I can remember one statement he made. He was like, you know, don't let me rape you. That's what he said. And at the time, like after that experience happened, like I just remember like moving through it and not telling anybody and pretending like it never happened. But it affected my school life so much. I always blamed it on not knowing what I wanted to do in Unilag, when actually I've always been fully aware of what I wanted to do, you know, growing up. I went from, you know, wanting to be a gynecologist to being so good in English. I don't know if I can swear. I was about to say fucking.
Yeah, you can swear.
To being so fucking good in English and so gifted in writing. And I used to win so many spelling bees to knowing that this was my calling, and just talking and writing was. Yeah. So I knew what I wanted to do. But I just didn't do that thing because I had experienced something so traumatic. And I didn't speak to anybody about it. Especially not my granny, because I had so much shame. No, I didn't want to be blamed. Like, oh yes, if you didn't dress that way, like maybe they wouldn't have done that. Because like, knowing people that are like rapists and assaulters, it's not about your dressing. It's about like a power play, and you're the victim. So I didn't tell my granny, and I remember being so in my head, and it's like they poured cold water on me, because like I had come from a missionary school where you're program was aligned for you. You ate 6 times a day. You had siesta, you slept, you woke up, you went for classes. Everything was so, you know, secluded, and you were safe, even if like the school wasn't really the best in terms of like emotional everything. And I had come from that to being so naive with life and how people can be, how wicked they can be. And you know, it felt like somebody poured cold water on me, and I was just like, wait, this is actual reality. Like, this is a story, or countless stories that I've heard from people, and people tell me, women, men, like, oh, I was sexually assaulted. It was one of those things I didn't think would ever happen to me. When it happened, it was just so shocking that I didn't assimilate it properly. My grades started dropping. I stopped, you know, going to school. You know, I blamed it on not knowing what I wanted to do, but like, it was actually because of that experience.
Yeah.
Also having to do with the fact that I wasn't stable either, because I had left home. So figuring that out while with...
And you couldn't speak to anybody about it. You just sucked it up and kept it moving.
Yeah, because like I said, like I didn't want to be shamed for it. Yes. I grew up with a really strict granny. And I'm so glad that she apologized, because like, you know, coming out of Big Brother's house, we had like rifts here and there. You know, parents just like... When you grow up in like a toxic environment and you're now grown and you're doing your own thing, they expect like you're just automatically supposed to be close to them. So I came out of the house. I still wasn't close to my parents. I still wasn't close to my granny, you know. And then one time she sent me a video crying. I thought something bad had happened. And, you know, she just apologized. She was like, if you ever got, you know, sexually assaulted and I didn't listen, or all the times. And also I was scared to tell my granny, because when my granny found out I was self-harming, she took me to a police station. I was like 15 when she found out my school had called her.
Yeah.
She's giving me police station to sign that I would never do that. Something along the lines of that. I still have the documents. So like there was so much fear and anxiety. Like if I had told her this, like.
Let's come back.
You know, something.
Of harming.
Yeah.
Let's come back. When? What age?
I started self-harming when I was like 12. At the time, I didn't know why I was doing it. You know, like I would just see a blade or just cut myself. I figured out why I was doing it like later in life.
Were you unhappy?
Like I said, like I grew up like, you know, my parents are relatively young. Yeah. So I met my great grandma. Mm. And she was my favorite person in the world. Like if my granny would shout at me or yell at me, my great granny would literally, if she was at home, she would be there because she lived with us.
Yeah.
And she would just carry us from the madness. That's my brother and I.
Yeah.
And she started getting sick. She had dementia.
Yeah.
So she went from actually knowing my name to not knowing my name. And I was so, so young. I remember being so young. We had, you know, my granny got a nanny and everything. And she didn't really like the nanny. I don't know why we let the nanny go. And then it had to be my brother and I taking care of my great granny with my granny. Mm. You know, she just slowly deteriorated. She'd call me her brother. She wouldn't remember my name or any of our names. She would pee on herself. You know, it was a lot to take on us, like, growing up. Like, she started getting sick when I was, like, maybe 10 or something.
Yeah.
At the time, my brother and I didn't understand. So she would say things, like, off point. Yeah. I would just be laughing, like, bro, what is wrong with this woman? Mm. I remember being 12 and researching it.
Yeah.
And just seeing, like, oh, this person is forgetting you. And I had, like, a clearer knowledge of what was going on. And then she died when I was 15. But, you know, like, I think it did take a toll on me. And I only realized how much it affected me because I have severe health anxiety now. Like if anything is like slightly wrong with me, like I'm so hyperfixated, like am I getting sick? So yeah, I think that costed, you know, like I said, I didn't really grow up in like the most convenient household. So I think that was like, you know, my outlet. So I just cut myself for whatever reason. I still don't understand the logic of like self-harming, but I feel like maybe you just want something that is in your heart to hurt you. Like maybe if your brain focuses on your body being hurt instead, like it would be like a temporary escape from like what is actually really going on in like your brain and your heart. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't forget my description. I'm just like,
yeah.
Where do I go from here? So let's come to your granny. So your granny finds out that you're self-harming and she takes you to
police station.
What did that do for you?
It instilled fear that I already had. I was so scared of my granny growing up. And it's only now that we're trying to rebuild a relationship.
Mm.
And sometimes I get so angry at myself for wanting to keep a distance. But like, you know, I've told myself like I have to obviously take it easy. You know, it's not an easy step. But like instilled a lot of fear, you know. Going to Big Brother, I was so surprised at how willing I was to talk about the things that I was struggling with.
Mm.
Before, you know, I had a boyfriend. That was my first ever boyfriend.
Mm.
And before, like, something would be going on with me and my boyfriend would ask me, like, what's wrong with Angel? And I would just be like, oh, nothing. Just give me time. I'll be fine. I never wanted to speak about it. But it did a lot for me. You know, fear, shame, anger, hurt. Sadness, because I so deeply wanted somebody to ask me how I was when I was growing up. Nobody ever asked me how I was doing. I was always in a constant state of something, like something was off and I was struggling so bad.
Yeah.
And I used to journal until, you know, my school banned journaling for whatever reason, bro. Like Nigeria is so weird. And they said we could not journal anymore. We're not allowed to bring journals into the school, actually. They would search your bags and everything. And I used to journal. That was my outlet. And my self-harming just got worse when they said we had to stop journaling. So I just wish that someone asked me, like, yo, are you okay?
Yeah.
Nobody ever asked me that. I actually even remember in high school when one of my friends had found out that I was self-harming and she was like, are you a white girl? And I excuse us with teenagers, and teenagers are pretty harsh and naive. But for me, I didn't take it lightly because it was like, I'm the same age as you, and you can't tell me that I'm more emotionally aware than you are. So I was hurt and I was sad and I was ashamed and I was so scared that, you know, like I was going to wake up one day and I would be done with it and, you know, nobody would care about like what was going on with me.
So sorry.
Thanks.
I mean, before going there, I mean, like, so I understand that. Do you sometimes think that, you know, I mean, now that you're older, like, maybe that's the only way she knew how to raise her grandchild, because she had a child. She probably had your mother early.
Mm-hmm.
She had to look out for your great granny, yourself and everybody. She probably, that's the only way she probably knew how to raise.
Yeah. Children. I think I started forgiving her after before Big Brother. I actually started, you know, my forgiving journey. And that was because I knew that she too had passed through so much trauma that the way that she raised me was the only way she knew how to.
Yes.
So I don't fault her for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish it was better and we had a better understanding, but I don't fault her for it. I've actually forgiven her and I've seen it from her logic because, you know, she took on so much as well.
Yeah.
You know, having a daughter that had me early, having to come back from London to take care of, you know, her grandchild, and then having to take care of her mother as well. Can't fault her for, you know, maybe being angry and paranoid and anxious. Mm. I do understand like where all of that was coming from.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I'm happy that you're in a better place now. It's just crazy. So you left Unilag at 17. You got into Unilag at 17?
Yeah. Sort of, yes.
So you left after 2 weeks after the assault.
I didn't leave. I was still around within the premises, school, yeah. But I never went for classes.
Yeah.
After 2 weeks.
Unilag does a lot of us. I'm not going to go into it, but,
yeah.
But I want to know what you were doing after Unilag, all the time that you, all those times where you were not going to classes up until Big Brother. What was that phase? What was happening with you? You had a boyfriend at the time who passed. Mm-hmm. Right, I just want to talk about that phase. What happened?
Actually, didn't have my boyfriend until I was 18, December ish.
Yeah.
But we started dating officially when I was 19.
Mm.
I don't know what I was doing, or maybe my brain has wiped it off.
How are you surviving? Did you grind that you were out of school?
No, nobody knew I was out of school until, you know, my mom had asked, and I just was like, let me finally admit that I was out of school.
How long did she ask? How long after school did she ask? How long after leaving school did she ask?
Actually, don't remember the timeline. We had periods where we actually did not used to talk because she was doing stuff. Yeah. So maybe it took a long while before she was like, oh, Angel, how is school? And I was just there like, well, I dropped out.
Whoa, must have killed her.
Not really. I give my parents, you know, props for being somewhat chilled. Understanding yeah. and chill. So when I told her that, she asked me why, and I obviously did not tell her what happened. I was just like, oh, I don't think I was doing the right course.
Mm.
And then she just enrolled me in like a foundational program for me to go to the UK.
But
I dropped out of that as well.
Why?
I feel like a lot of it has to do with, you know, actually not knowing my direction and what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
That also played a part.
Mm.
And also like every other thing that had happened, my brain being so, like everything was happening and COVID happened, you know, that's also dulled my morale because 2019 and everything had entered, you know, I'd enrolled into the program, foundation and everything. I was meant to write my exams 2020, the next year, then COVID happened, you know, so much was happening and I was just like, yeah, I'm not even doing something I want to do anyways. And I also think it had to stem from going to a high school where you had to be smart by force. And obviously, like if you're in school, you have to do well. Yeah. But like theirs was at the expense, like you got your smartness from shame. That was how the high school was made in the wow. sense where, okay, we had continuous assessment tests. We had two in one term, if I remember correctly. If you failed three subjects upwards, you had a stay back order. And because, I don't know if you know Louisville, but like Marywood is the Lagos one and everything. You know, Marywood was a public school.
I went to school in Warrior.
Okay, Marywood was a public school before. Mm-hmm. And then the Catholics came and they reformed it.
Yeah.
And it became a private school. Yeah. So my set was the second set. There was just one set above me.
Yeah.
So you got into that school. And the A was 96. I mean, Louisville standard 96. Is always high. A 96 or a 97, if I remember correctly.
How many people were getting 96?
Not a lot of people were getting 96. So you could see maybe an 80-something at the end of the term. And in other schools, this was obviously a fucking A.
Yeah.
But you're seeing something like a B or even a C, depending on the type of 80 something you get.
And you made it feel something.
Yeah. So if it's like 82, then it's like, what are you doing? It's not even the grade that makes you feel a type of way, because obviously you have friends in like other schools and you hear their results. I know you're doing better than them.
Yeah.
It was a shame because we're so small. We had something called a results assembly.
Right.
So they would call your results out in front of everybody. So it's a thing of, Angel, you failed three subjects. And
now you're failing like maybe like C or D.
Yeah. And everybody, because in continuous assessment, your fail was 6.6. So you needed a 6.1 over 10 to pass a subject. So you say you failed three subjects and then stay back order. That's what comes off after. So when your mates, because it's a strictly boarding school, when your mates are going home, you stay back in school. So there's this like shame and fear of like maybe your juniors hearing your results.
Mm.
So you want to overachieve and overwork and overexert yourself, even though you know you're trying your hardest.
Mm.
And when you graduate from that school, you come out as such a robot.
Yeah.
Because there were so many other rules. You couldn't come out without your handkerchief. You couldn't come out without your wristwatch. If you came out without these things, they warranted you getting punished. You know, you would go work in the kitchen or you garden or something like that.
Mm.
You know, your shoes, everything. Like, it was just so strict.
The military camp.
Yes. Like, I think you come out of that school and your brain is just overperforming. And it's normal if you just feel tired. Because you've gone, especially if you went through the whole 6 years, you've gone through 6 years of this rigorous training.
Mm.
If you come out and school is just so exhausting, I don't actually blame anybody who went to that school, because it's like, yeah, I've actually pulled a lot of work, especially when they divided our classes. So year nine, you know, you're writing WAEC. So they divided the classes into rows, Lily and Ivy. So those that were in rows were those that were not that smart. Those that were in Lily were the average ones.
Wow.
And those that were smart were in Ivy. Me that was in Ivy, I didn't even think I needed to be there. All my friends that I liked were like scattered among the classes. And for me growing up, it was so necessary because we actually work better together. Why did you need to divide us into?
So basically, they were telling you guys that this is a class for the smart people.
Yes, like those of us that were in Ivy.
And the dumb ones.
Yes. So imagine being in rows and feeling so.
Oh, so the people in rows knew that they were dumb because of the group.
They announced it. They were like, oh, so we're splitting the classes into rows, Lily and Ivy. If you're in Ivy, it means you're doing well. If you're in Lily, it means you're not doing that well. If you're in rows, it means you need to work hard. Let's just say that's how they put it. So yes, if you're not that smart or if you're not doing academically well, they'll put you in rows. Lily for those that were average, and then Ivy. And the competition in Ivy was so tough for us because you could be downgraded. That's another thing. So like the next CAT would come, and if you flopped in that CAT, they would downgrade you to Ivy.
So
is it that crazy?
You can be in that class and one day
I was in Ivy overperforming. Like,
what kind of mental torture is that?
It was torture. So when people tell me you're smart, like, I'm just like, yes, but at what cost? It came at an expense of me being hyperly fixated on everything, at the expense of my social life, because like, instead of me to be socializing, and because it was strictly all girls, like, if they saw you hanging out too much with a particular girl, it just became something else.
Right.
And now they're telling you, you can no longer be friends with that person. Like, I had a best friend. Her name was Tumi. They separated us. Like, they didn't want us to be friends because this is my best friend. But it was weird to them, you know. It was a crazy system. And all my friends in high school that I still speak to talk about how it caused us, like, so much trauma. Because imagine being in year nine and you're competing for, I want to stay in this Ivy class. Let my parents not think that I'm one of those.
Yeah.
Which is just honestly weird for children that are what? 14, 15.
You know, now that, I mean, we're growing older, we just realize that some people have like learning disabilities, some people catch on faster.
Yes.
Doesn't necessarily mean that the people who are in that
class, Ivy class had make it.
Because
for me that had ADHD, it was chaotic.
Yeah.
Because like with ADHD, at the time I didn't know what I was struggling with. I just found out I had ADHD 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Or so.
At Please the time, explain to my audience what ADHD means.
It's kind of like
a disorder, right?
An attention deficit, something, I don't know, like the hyperactivity disorder. Yeah. So it has like, it's not one spectrum.
Yeah.
There are some people that have ADHD and they're like high achievers, like they're overachievers. And there's some people that their attention span is so tiny. And I happen to fall.
Spectrum.
I happen to fall into that spectrum where like their attention span is so tiny for friendships, for anything. Growing up, I just thought maybe I had like a social problem.
Yeah.
But finding out that actually I have ADHD just makes so much sense. So it was war for me in school. Yeah. Like I struggled with school so much, but like I couldn't open my mouth and be like, oh, I'm struggling. Let them not come and say I'm dumb. Because like I know I'm not dumb. It's just like my attention.
Yeah.
So like being in that Ivy class, I had to put in more work than people thought I was putting. Like my friends would think, oh, she's playing, she doesn't read or everything. But like I happened to do better. I actually did not used to read in school because I could not fully focus on that. So like every other thing, like passing my tests and everything, I had to listen in class, even though people thought I was just joking or like playing.
Mm.
I got my knowledge from just sitting down and listening to and even that was a task, you know. I had to always tell myself and be like, you have to actually focus on this.
Mm.
So being in that Ivy class was war because like you're with all these other people that maybe want to go into sciences. And you're there knowing that your own forte is in literature and in English and in the arts, but you're packed to people that want to go into science class.
And now
so you have to compete for your stay in that Ivy class.
It's not even stupid. Like back in secondary school, they actually made science people feel like they were the shits, and we the art people were.
They don't know how hard it is to be a creative.
I'm like, you're crazy. I think in school, that's my, even my granny thought I was going to be an engineer. She took me to science class.
I wanted
class.
To be a gynecologist.
I'm like, me, engineer. That my life is to catch cruise. You want to catch cruise to this level where you make it a career.
Yeah.
I don't think they respect the arts. And I think that secondary school should fix that because look at what's happening in the world today.
And I also feel like separating some of the sciences is so dumb. That's why so many people grow up and they don't know shit about shit. It's like, you're an art student, take only arts. Like, let's have a bit of everything, which is like kind of like the system abroad. You know, like some art students take chemistry or something. Know something.
I also feel like a lot of people who are in the business of education should not even be in the business in the first place.
That's true.
Because a lot of us are traumatized from secondary school. Most of our trauma was from secondary
school. Because why was I debating boys are better than girls in high school? Why was that a topic? Why was farmers are better than teachers? Prove yes or no. Why?
Now like, they know recently before.
That's why I feel like there's so much classism in Nigeria because like somebody's like, oh, I'm a teacher, and someone's like, yeah, that's a dignified job. And then someone else comes like, I'm a farmer, and it was just like farmer kid. Like
farmer will get money past
exactly
teacher. No,
when it's actually these people that are in aggregate that the fucking shit, you know, it's strange. The boys and girls conversation still pisses me off today. Because like I remember debating, boys are better than girls. Go against this. Go for this. Why is that a topic?
Was that an actual debate topic?
That was an actual debate topic.
Boys are better than girls.
Boys are better than girls. Say yes, why they are, or say no. Oh,
yeah.
Like, go
let's
against
the motion. Boys are better than girls. Talk your own. Why are girls better than boys?
I don't think anyone is better than anyone.
Of course I'm joking. Of course I'm joking.
It was just nerve-wracking, honestly. There's so much that has to be done in the educational sector in Nigeria. Those debate topics are horrible.
Wow. I think that... So when I talk to people like that are around my age or even a bit older, I just realized that all of us went through the same things, like through the same trauma, through the same... I'm just wondering, who's going to fix our system? Like, if... You know, the first person I'm speaking to that secondary school messed up like this.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't mess you up, but I mean, like, went through it in secondary school. I went through it in UNILAG, a bit of secondary school, but I feel like UNILAG was my major
mess up era.
I was getting trolled at Love Guardian.
Oh, I remember Love Guardian.
Such a nasty place. Like, I actually don't go to UNILAG because I don't want to pass through that Love Guardian. It just reminds me of all the things.
I have so much PTSD, like, if I'm ever around but I can't remember the last time I was ever around Iyaba, but like, there was this time I came out of Big Brother and I don't know what led me there. I think I needed to braid my hair or something. Yeah. And I had skin. Salon was just like 5 minutes, like walk from you. Like, and it brought back so much PTSD.
They had called me for an award or something. I said yes initially, but I just, after a while, I was like, no.
I saw this TikTok where they were like successful UNILAG students. And I was like, do not
do it. Don't do that.
Don't.
Oh, our lives. ULAG will be fine. But ULAG actually helped me a bit, but it broke me.
Educational wise.
Let's talk about going into the house. So this time when you were not in school,
mm-hmm.
you were probably not employed at the time. Did you think that Big Brother was the next thing for you to just, was the next option for you? Because a lot of people say that, oh yeah, and if I should not get work like this, Big Brother would be the next thing. Mm-hmm. But why did you go to Big Brother? Was it because you didn't have any other option after, or because it was something that you're actually looking for?
For me, it was a thing of, you know, when all your life you've just looked for like the tiniest bit of serotonin to like keep you going.
My sister speaks so much English. The tiniest bit of
excitement. Like you just need that boost in your brain. So like I said, like, okay, yeah, I went for Big Brother 2021. We're all back mm-hmm. in COVID then and everything. And I had just dropped out from like, you know, foundation mm-hmm. at my school. And I just said to myself, I sat down one day and I was like, what next? Because mind you, at this time, I wasn't, you know, still living with my granny. I was still, you know, going from like, you know, one place to the other. I was still writing for people and just getting like small.
Oh, so you paid right at the time.
Yes, like I used to write for people.
What
like,
kind of writing were you
they
doing?
They needed like assignments drawn.
Ha!
They sent me like English assignments.
Oh, you accidents.
I was a hustling lady.
No, but you would have thought say no. Hey. So you're doing assignments for people in school?
I was a hustling. No, not in school. Like I had come out of school now and I needed something. So like I used to be on countless GCs, you know, sometimes.
Wow.
So I would network and everything. And then people needed like their English or literature. They just had an assignment. Even secondary school students, like, you know, their parents would pay me to write for, you know, homework or just read through it.
Wild.
I was a hustly lady. That's how I went by day to day.
So you would make money off writing?
Just off
but
writing.
But you were not in school?
I was in school.
So you were that smart?
I am that smart.
I love it.
I feel like people underplay me a lot, but yes. I'm a fucking whiz.
Let's get into it.
Let's show them how smart you are.
So that you got by doing
yeah,
those.
Yeah, I got by, you know, by writing. And, you know, 2019, I obviously lost my boyfriend. So
wow,
a lot going back to school for me felt actually too soon. I hadn't grieved properly because I entered school in August. My boyfriend had died in June.
How long did you guys date for?
Still, we had, if I include the talking stage, maybe like a year, you know. But like,
it was talking stage.
Actually, still no. Like I mean, like if I include the talking stage, a year.
How long was
we're actually
stage?
Dating? We were talking for like 6 months.
Jesus, I beg angel. Now, so you wanted a girl boyfriend for this Lagos? Talking 6 months.
Like I said, like my attention span affects like a lot of things. So like, you know, he would always be the one doing most of the work.
Six
either it's
months.
Like, Angel, like, let's make this work. And I grew up so scared of people
yeah.
loving me.
Yeah.
Just so, because like, people actually think I'm a hard guy. I'm not a hard guy. I'm so soft. That
tell me about it.
I have to actually be
protect,
a hard guy and
yeah.
protect that bubble
God
because
up, yeah.
I'm so scared of being hurt. And
yeah.
even worse, because like, before then I had so many men toasting me, like, you know, mm-hmm. you're just fresh out of high school. You have all
to
these stupid perverts.
Yeah.
You have the ones that your age mates, you know, then they are not untouched. So it's
never
like,
been touched.
Men are so like, oh wow,
this is
a visionary, you know, fresh meat. So I have people to see me. I just did not let them get to that level. Mm. So it was my boyfriend, 6 months, he was talking to me, Angel, please now, please.
Aww.
And I finally agreed. And then as the universe, I don't know if it's the universe that willed it, but like he died in June.
What,
and
what,
that
was he sick? What happened?
6 months of dating. No, he actually just exed. I feel like he was like deuces because like the day before he was like, oh, we're meant to see the next day, you know. He was like, oh, I can't wait to see you in the morning and everything and I love you. This was by like 11 p.m. And then his brother calls me. First of all, I would like to say that I was talking to his brother first if I met him.
Angel.
I was talking to his brother and everything and then I met him and I just exed his brother because I'm like, yeah, this person
this
fits.
Yeah.
It was just like a connection, you know, and I knew I was going to get connected to him. That's why I kept on running away. So, you know, like the next day his brother calls me and it's like, I'm thinking of maybe he's coming to pick me up with, you know, Victor. And then Matthew is like, oh, that, from the tone of his voice, I was just like, what happened to Victor. But like, I was not expecting a he has died thing. Yeah. I was expecting a
sick or
something, and it's like he didn't wake up. And I remember like the breath leaving my body, because it's like, oh my God, I've watched all those things like romantic movies yes. that always end up sad, like the person has cancer or something yes. chaotic. And my imagination was just like, this would never happen to me. I do know the funny thing is, I did not process that information that day, because that day I went out to drink Shock. Wine. And I have videos of me, like, you know, making videos.
Doesn't make sense. I spoke to him the night before.
Yes, like making yeah. videos normally. Like that night I went out, I was outside, like I was in the club, you know, like I was having the time of my life. And they had told me this in the afternoon. The night I was clubbing. And then the next day, in the morning, I woke up and I texted my boyfriend. I was like, how are you, baby? No reply. And I called Matthew. And Matthew is like, Angela, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, wait, let's chill. And it just felt like the breath in my body had left me, because like I clung onto him so much, because it felt like, you know, God had finally like blessed well. Me with someone that I did not have to explain myself to. Mm. Like Victor could see me doing something and he just knew like, this is why you're doing it. And I don't think I have healed from that. Not in the sense where, oh, I'm still grieving. In the sense where, in my mind, I still feel like I'm never going to find someone that would ever get me like that. And when I tell people I don't want to get married, they're just always like, oh, it's small picking that's worrying her or this or that. But there are two things. One, I genuinely feel like he was my soulmate. And two, I also feel like if I ever, you know, I'm looking for like the right wording.
Mm.
Let me think about it. When I tell people that I don't want to get married, they think because oh, she's a hard girl and she doesn't love anybody. But like in reality, like I'm actually shielding myself
yeah.
from experiencing the level anything. Of vulnerability. I know that's what my brain is doing. Because of course, like I want to be loved and I want to love back. But I feel like I've let this like one person
and this
in
is what
and this is what happens. Of course, I want to get married and have the time of my life with like someone that loves me and I don't have to explain my existence to, that just sees me. But like every time I get close to somebody, my brain just actually goes into default and it's like, yeah. nope, Angel, just explode no, yourself.
This is what I also think, right? So you can look at it from this angle. What if God gave you Victor to let you know that you can be loved? Somebody can actually love you like that?
It's also a thing of then why the fuck did you take him then? Like it's one thing for you to tell us, okay, oh, Angel, break up. You know? It's another thing for you to be like, yeah, we're going to wipe him from the surface. No,
but
of
if
the
Victor
earth.
Came and saw through you and was your guy, it shows that somebody can come again and just be that person. So I understand the vulnerability of not even, it's just a lot of vulnerability, because this is the one time that you finally opened up to love somebody and poof, it was gone. So I understand, but then again, think about it. Maybe God actually brought him to show you that, you know what, girl, you can actually be love.
I've actually experienced love again. I mean, like before I went into Big Brother, like I had like Forsyth, and he's actually like the sweetest person after Victor that I've ever met, if not on the same par. Actually, he was so sweet to me, but it just couldn't work for whatever reason. And that's why in my brain, I just think that okay. Maybe my soulmate has actually died and I'm just destined to be
calling you 22. There's so many soulmates that you miss to you before you die.
Fair enough. I don't think so, Sha. Maybe friendship soulmates, because I like to categorize my soulmates into
you
like
can start from there if you
I
see.
Haven't found my friendship soulmates. Maybe I will find. But like my soulmates, like someone that is the love of my life.
Mm.
I don't know. But like you said, I'm still 22, so it maybe
you find. Okay, let's talk about your life in Big Brother. So, no, let's talk about, I usually like hearing the audition stories, right? So, tell me about auditions and getting to the house.
It was chaotic. So, you know, like, I had just been like, you know, I need a boost, like something to just distract me. So, I remember my mom, I didn't want to go for Big Brother. When the auditions came out, my mom was like, you know that the auditions for Big Brother have come out, go now. And I was like, no.
I heard your mom actually wanted to go, but she couldn't get in.
She wanted to go, but she didn't do it. Like said, she never got to actually audition me.
So she pushed.
She was just all those things. You know when you say something, it's like, oh yeah, I want to go for Big Brother, but you actually never go to like do it. So she was like, yeah, I want to go. And she actually never went. She was having the time of her life in Ghana. So my mom was like, you know, the auditions have come out. Like, go and look at the you know, website and everything. And I was like, ah, why would I go for Big Brother? I should like go see if anybody gives you bass, give them bass.
I love your mother, by the way. I have to say.
She's such a fucking icon. I love her so much.
Like, so wait, before we get into the story, cause you just talked about your mom now.
Yeah.
Did your relationship with your mom get better over time?
Yeah, it did, because like I could just see my mom was me, honestly. And like we have actually come such a long way from generational trauma. She herself didn't grow up with my granny. You know, my granny was in London and she was in Nigeria. She had to grow up with an aunt that treated her so badly, which was why she had me.
Yeah.
You know? That's why I would get so upset. Like when people throw me online, I don't care. But like when people throw my mom, it gets to me and I always have to remind myself to not reply because it's like, this woman has gone through so much for me. I went to a high school where our fees were up to $1 million and my mom paid that fucking shit every month, every year for 6 years as a single mother by herself.
That's her name, right?
Yes.
Shout out to Titi.
It's like, I give her so much accolades for the shit that she did for me, even though like in terms of like emotion, she wasn't really like a stronghold, you know, to lean on. But in terms of making sure that my school work was done, and I used to be the friend that people would come to in high school, like if they needed something, they had run out of toiletry or anything, it would be me. I had a bag of glitter pens. You know, I was artsy. Like,
she provided for you.
She provided for me as a single mom.
Yeah.
From when she was 16. I wore the best clothes. Yeah. I wore rough and tumble growing up as a fucking child.
Come on now.
I drank Cerelac, like as a single mother. Like I give her props and I get so upset when people drag her because, you know, she's so young and, you know, she does TikToks and she's online and people don't understand that she's doing those things because she was a child raising me. She didn't have the time
to even
experience those things and do the things that her people that did not doing, have kids were doing, you know, clubbing and all of that.
Yeah.
So if I see my mom clubbing now, I mean, her DM's like, yes, girl, you go. Because like, you spend so much time as a child. I grew up with you, basically. Yeah. There's not so much of a gap between my mom and I. I'm in my 20s, she's in her 30s. So, you know, I grew up with her. So I go 24, 25. So when people come and they're trolling her, I'm just like, please leave that woman alone to enjoy her life.
Mm.
You know, let her do her TikToks in peace. Let her be online in peace. If she wants to comment on that Insta blog, let her go and comment on that Insta blog because she didn't experience those things.
You know, for people like us, my mom had me at 16 as well, right? You don't realize how much they were still growing. Now that I'm 25, by the time I was 10, my mother was 26. Even though she made all the terrible decisions, I'm just thinking about like, at 26, you even have your life figured out. How will you raise a child? You're probably just trying to figure out your own shit. And if your mom did all these things to still make sure that you had a decent life, at least, we need to give her
props. Because like, I'm 22 now and I'm still figuring shit now.
Yeah.
She was 22 and she was paying school fees. I went to, like I said, I had the best things. I was never hungry, never grew up hungry. Went to the best high school, went to the best, I never actually saw suffering growing up. I traveled to see my mom, like when she would travel. So it means that she was pulling so much weight because I'm 22 now. And I can't imagine having a child at this age. Like, I'm not don't take care of myself. So I can't imagine the work she puts in.
Yeah.
So like, yes, props to her. Like, when she creates her TikToks, like, leave her alone to create those TikToks. She's having the time of her life.
Let Titi be. Auntie Titi.
Yes, let my mommy be.
That's a good one. I'm happy that you guys have worked on your relationship. So big brother. Yeah.
So yes, my mom was like that. If anybody insults you, insult them back. You know, my mom is more fierce than me. I would like to attribute it to she being an Aries. People don't believe in zodiac signs. But
I believe in, what's a zodiac?
I'm an Aquarius.
Yeah.
My mom is an Aries. I feel like that's why our personality is kind of conflicted a little bit. She's more, you know,
Aries are very strong and fierce.
Yes. And me, I'm just there like, mommy, chill.
Yeah.
So she's like, yeah, go for big brother and everything. So I'm like, okay, just going to do it and see how it goes. I mean, I'm looking for a boost somewhere.
Were you surprised when they picked you?
I definitely was, because like I had just turned 21 in February.
Right. Yeah.
So a lot of people don't believe my age, actually. I don't know why. But I had just turned 21 in February. So I was just doing it for the heck of it. And then I got to the first stage. And there's so many stages. And I'm always so alarmed when people say that we pay. I wish I paid. I went through so many stages of doubt. And you know when you're like already knee deep in it. And it's like, after all of this, if they don't pick me, it's going to be war.
Yes.
So first stage, calm. They pick me. Second stage, calm. They pick me third stage, calm. They pick me fourth stage. I wait, actually, and I'm waiting. Something finally comes. And then we go to all the stages. That's how that's obviously you do your medicals and everything to make sure you're safe.
You got some, of course you've got some medicals.
Yeah, and then the final stage, they send us like this meal. You have to get something by this time, by this time. If you don't get it, it means you're not going. So they give us a time frame. Like, let's say they said 4 to 6. If you don't get your invite, you're not going. But they just sent, in that meal, they also sent you the things that you need to pack. So, you know, I had packed my stuff and everything. You know, I packed myself with Forsyth. He was the one that was dropping me on my interviews and everything.
Who's Forsyth?
Like the person I was talking to that I said I'd found love somehow. Like,
oh, that's his name.
His name is Forsyth.
Forsyth.
Yeah.
Like.
Not Forsyth. For, like F-O-R-E and Syth, S-Y-T-H-E.
Now the same thing. But yeah.
So, you know, they gave us a time frame and I didn't get mine. So I'm unpacking my stuff and everything. And then at that time I remember going to church so frequently because I so desperately needed like stability or something in my life to just give me the it factor, you know.
I was just Jesus is the way, but okay.
And then God, the devil decided to test me during that period. My mom got so sick, we had to fly her back to Nigeria.
Oh, wow.
So during the interview process, I was taking care of my mom. She didn't remember me. And it just brought like so much like PTSD from like my great granny. So it was like, oh, is this happening? Again, so we brought her back and everything. We're having the interview. We're going through that process and everything. And then I was so close to God then. I had gone to church and I was like, this is what is happening in my life. I don't know what's next. Like, if they actually pick me, then like, who's going to take care of my mom? Like, I can't obviously leave her to my granny and everything. So much doubts. And then my mom got better for some reason. We thank God she got better. But like during that period while she was still struggling and everything, they didn't send me, you know, my meal on time. And then I remember going to church that day and I was just like, by this time my mom was getting better. I was just like, maybe my mom was going to get sick again. Maybe that's why I didn't, you know, get picked or anything. So I'll just stay and take care of her. And I remember going to church and everything. And I went back home, you know, I drove back home to Forsyth. And Forsyth was just like, just check that. You decided to say. I was like, no, like, they already said that this is the time frame and everything. And I remember, like, a voice just telling me, check your mail. And I checked my mail and I refreshed it. Nothing was there. And I refreshed it again just for, like, posterity. And then I saw my mail there. And I remember calling for sight and packing my fucking shit so fast. And I zipped my box. I was like, yes, bitch.
Finally.
I got in. And then I remember crying so hard because it was like, I just needed something, yes, you know.
Yes.
And then we had the whole lockdown process and then I got in. And I remember looking at the house because I used to know about Big Brother. My granny was such a fanatic of Big Brother. You know, there was Big Brother Africa. I had even met Kevin. There was one Kevin that won. I don't know if he was BBA or something.
Kevin Pam?
I think I was so small, right? Tiny. I had met Uti as well. Like, yeah. I was so tiny. And
finally, you're here.
I entered inside the house and it was a full circle moment. I was like, wait, I watched Uti on this fucking show. And the colors were so bright. You know, the house was so,
so beautiful.
It was so bright and it was so colorful. And it was a lot coming from that place. And I feel like they did that on purpose because we came from such a gloomy place for lockdown to just being hit, and I was the first girl to walk in.
Crazy.
A major fuck you to those boys for the prank they pulled, yeah. Because when I walked in, I was like, hey, and everyone was like, shans, oh my god. Reality TV. And I remember it being so wow, like full circle moment.
What did you expect the house to be, and what did you expect the house to be, and what did it eventually become to you? Did it meet your expectations, or were you?
First of all, I have to say that I miss Biggie, like the person himself, so much that on some days I actually cry, and on some days I actually regret not telling him, Big Brother, I'm going to fucking miss you so much. I wish I had said that because I do miss him, you know. I feel like in the midst of all of that confusion in the house, like, there was just always Big Brother to go to. And I know a lot of people say that he liked me a lot because there's like a lot of Biggie's Baby going around. And I'm just like, well, thank God for that, you know. And I feel like he was actually my friend. And I just wish he would show his face.
You guys used to talk a lot?
We used to talk. And I didn't know what else was going on with the housemates. But when I came out to people actually calling me like, you know, Biggie's Baby and everything, I was like, oh, maybe we actually had a friendship. Maybe that's why I miss him this much. Because obviously I go in there knowing that I'm never going to know who this person is. I'm never going to see who this person is. So I'm just attached to like this voice. So going into Big Brother, would I say met my expectations? I would say not really, but also kind of, in the sense where I have actually gone through this world. And I know I'm just 22, and people tell me you're just 22, but like, I have gone through this world knowing or realizing that I actually do not fit in. Like in a place where they're like 20 people, it's me that is probably just the one sticking out. And I felt like that a lot in the house. But I tried not to show that in terms of like my friendships, because I knew that if I had shown that, it would be a thing where it would actually ruin my stay in the house. And I wanted to enjoy the experience for what, you know, it was. So coming outside of the house, you know, there were so many people that I liked, and I'm such...
Sorry, let's come back. What were the things that made you feel like you were sticking out?
First of all, like I said, I'm not the average conservative Nigerian.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, you know, the perception people have of me is that, oh, I'm probably, you know, around and like, you know, I like to date multiple people at the same time. When in actuality, I'm such a lover's girl and I just avoid that space. Yeah. And I'm actually a loner. Like, I don't talk to anybody, even now being in the industry, which is bad.
Yeah.
And I'm trying my best to actually come out of that shell and socialize. Yeah. But in actuality, I'm such... it to myself, girl.
Yeah.
So, I have grown up with people stereotyping me.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of, like, appearance. You know, even sometimes people would tell me, oh, you're so cool. You're cooler than I expected. And I'm like, I know I'm not giving anybody an image of me being weird or rude or anything. I think I actually show how sweet I am, especially in Big Brother's house. Like, if like, people decided to focus on the things needed to be focused on, people would see how sweet I am, especially when I like you. So it's like people stereotype me in terms of like dressing. Yeah. You know, some people meet me and they're like, oh, like I didn't expect you to be that this type of person. And I know it's not about any other thing other than the way I dress,
yes.
Which is weird for me because it's like, I don't judge people based off of like their like appearance. Like if you like, be tatted from head to toe. If you like, have piercings all over your face. It's the
Nigerian thing to judge people.
It's the Nigerian thing to judge, you know, even with the SARS movement, like majority of it is because of police, like profiling young men or young women based off of their appearance, their dreads. I'm not that type of person. So people's perception of me is like, when they see me and I dress maybe risky in their terms. They think
that's what they call it.
They say I'm risky and there's my tattoos and I have a piercing.
I heard that you have like a lot of tattoos.
I won't consider them a lot. How like many? I mean, I've added like two more, but like
maybe, how many are they?
Maybe like 13.
Ha! Maybe tattoo parlor. You're 13.
Not a lot. Maybe like 13 or 14. I wouldn't consider that a lot, Sham. In my perspective, I've seen people like everywhere it started.
So you probably won't wake up one day and just have your own.
No, I definitely won't wake up one day and have my own sleeve. I think I'm actually done with like my tattoo kidney ring and everything. So it's like people see me and stereotype me and everything. So I always, and also like, I don't think in the ways some or most Nigerians would think. I mean, like I said, I actually don't see people and profile them based off of how they dress. So, you know, people grow up in like different families and their families have taught them these ideologies or like how they should be. You know, me, I have grown up in that as well. Like, I mean, I grew up with my granny that was a conservative Christian.
Yeah.
I was chapel prefect year 8 to year 12. I had to unlearn a lot of things as well growing up. So it's like, I don't think a lot of people have unlearned. So anytime I'm in a gathering, I always just feel like the oddball out in terms of like appearance and everything. So obviously when I went to Big Brother, I stuck out maybe, I don't know, maybe to the public, not so much. But even me in that space among 25 other housemates, I knew that I was just there sticking out in terms of, even if this was what I was wearing in Big Brother's house, I would have still, because I have a very, my personality is actually very strong as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I just say whatever is on my mind, irregardless of how the other person is feeling. Like, once I feel like that is the truth, I am going to say the truth. The only thing is, I'm going to try to make that truth a little bit sweet in order not to hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
So it's a thing of, even if I had dressed the way like I am now, people would have still seen me there being the sore thumb. So, you know, when I got into the house, I felt that way a lot of times. But like I said, I didn't want to stray because I didn't want it to ruin my chances in the house.
What was your relationship with the other housemate like? Did they make you feel like you actually stuck out? Did they intentionally just pick on you because you...
I wouldn't say anybody picked on me, at least not to my face, Sha.
Yeah.
But I would say that my perception, one thing that God has granted me is strong perception.
Discernment.
And I know how to discern. It's me that goes against my discernment. So there were some people that I knew didn't like me in the house and I did not get along with in the house at first. Like the first week, I had already said, oh no, I don't think I'm going to get along with this person. Even just by looking at them when they walked in, my spirit was already like, no. But like I said, I tend to usually go against my spirit because I like to give people the benefit of doubt. So my relationship in the house with people, in my perspective, was okay. I was nice to people that were nice to me, and the people that I didn't like and didn't like me back, I didn't pretend to like them.
Yeah.
That's one thing I can say for sure. I don't know how to pretend. Like, if I don't like you, I don't like you, and that's it. You know, I expected more because, like, I'm a feminist, obviously. And for me, it's always going to be women first in terms of everything. In terms of how women dress, in terms of what they do with their bodies, in terms of their presentation. For me, my philosophy in life is, as long as you're not hurting anyone, and you're not being negative to anybody, you have the right to leave terms on your own. And that is stronger for me in terms of women. So even going into the house, I only nominated one woman because I wanted a woman to so desperately win. But coming out of the house and seeing that the women that I liked didn't really like me back was kind of devastating for me. Not devastating because I did not know, but devastating in the sense where it's like, oh, Angel, like, you have shown them all the sides of you and they still chose to dwell on that side of you, you know.
Yeah.
While me, I was just there, like, giving everybody the free reign.
How did that make you feel? Did he put a strain on your relationship with the rest of the housemates? Are you guys so cordial? Do you guys do things together? Or are you just back to Angel the loner?
I think another thing that I hate most about me is, like, how forgiving that I am.
Me too.
I, like, you can stab me in the chest and you tell me, oh, Angel, I stabbed you because of this, I'll just be like, okay, I'll keep my distance. But I do not know how to hold a grudge. Like, there's somebody that I'm not talking to at the moment and I miss that person so much, but I've not reached out. Not because I hate the person, no, but because you've hurt me and let's just keep the distance. Yeah. So it's like, I mean, a lot of them have apologized to me, or some of them, let me not say a lot, at least the ones that offended me. And I have apologized for the ways that maybe I may have rubbed them off wrongly. But it did hurt me, especially the ones that I was so... And I feel like I was genuine towards everybody. Like, Perry, for example, I didn't really like Perry in the house. Coming outside of the... And I never tried to pretend like I did like him. Coming outside of the house, Perry and I have such a beautiful relationship. And he's such a phenomenal person. But there's some people that I did actually like in the house and I came out, especially the women, because I won't lie to you, I don't really care for the opinions of, you know, men. I would actually be more sad if a woman insulted me than if a man is like, oh yeah, you're stupid, because, well, yeah. So coming out to see, like, some of these women that I actually did like talking badly about me, it was heartbreaking. You know, it was one of those instances where I felt like I had put my all, or rather, I'd put my heart in my sleeve, on my sleeve rather, and I'd let my guard down, and they still ended up, you know, fucking me up. Not fucking me up, but, like, yeah, being mean towards me while pretending to like me.
Do you think there's unhealthy competition amongst you guys?
Yes, definitely.
Because I mean, there's a lot of things that I see online. I'm just like, yo, didn't these people all live in the same house for 3 months? Why this level of vitriol against each other? Like, the things that you guys say about yourselves, the drama that ensues with, I mean, it's just crazy. Do you think that's, is this competition fueled by the fans, or is this is just beef from inside the house? Or why is it that there's some sort of...
I'll say it's both ways. Because coming into the industry is you've been secluded from society for 3 months. That's if you're like me and you stayed until the finale. Even if you're not like me.
The shade of it all.
Even if you're not
the
like
shade.
Even if you're not like me and you stay 2 weeks, it's like you had lockdown. So there's that lockdown phase plus the 2 weeks. So you have been secluded for like a month from society and they just toss you into the industry. A lot of us that get into the industry, we're not in the industry
before. Don't know shit about the industry.
We don't know shit about shit. So when you're coming out, you're coming out thinking, oh, obviously people know me and that's cool, or you know, I'm famous now, brands are going to approach me. You're not knowing the details of like the intricacy of it all.
Yeah.
Then you come out and you're just tossed into the limelight.
A new industry that you're not aware of. Yeah.
And nobody knows how overwhelming it can be.
Yes.
And when you're out of the house, the first thing someone is telling you is, ha, you have only 1 year. Oh. After 1 year like this, new housemates will come. And everybody will forget you. You can tell yourself, oh, you know, God is going to give me my own pace. And if I'm meant to be here, I'm meant to be here.
But sometimes.
But your brain receives that information and you go into panic mode. So now, even deals that don't matter, that don't align with your brand, that are, let's not say cheap, but are offering you money that you have been offered more than, you take those deals.
Because
you have external pressure from outside telling you, you have to do what you have to do so that 1 year from now, you'll be relevant.
Also, you want to seem like you're winning.
You also want to seem like, oh, I'm the biggest and I'm winning. Meanwhile, there might be a deal that you've announced that wasn't even, you know, in terms of all the other things that you've collected, wasn't even up to par. But you just did it, not because you like the brand, because personally for me, I like to align myself with brands that love me. And when I came out of the house, I said it's like, I want my brand to be so family oriented that I can tell one of my brands, oh, I'm not feeling too well today. Can I reschedule my deliverables? That's the type of relationship that I want to build. And I want my brand to be able to tell me, oh, Angel, you're not doing something well. Can you help us with this? I want to sit down and meet the people that invited me into their space to be like, oh, you know, Angel, let's talk about this. You know, a friendly working environment.
Yeah.
Some people will accept deals and the working environment is not friendly. The pay is bad. It's just because like, as human beings, whether we like to admit it or not, especially as someone famous, you want people to validate you somehow.
Yeah.
You're doing work.
Yeah.
And you know that the work you're doing is great.
Mm.
But you see one person telling you, oh, she's not good or he's not good. And that ultimately affects your whole day. Even though there's like millions of comments telling you you're doing amazing.
We always tend to focus on the brand.
And even that one time where your brand is like, oh, Angel or this person, you haven't really done much for us. Even though your brand has been complimenting you since, is that one you would dwell on? Now you have gone to your page to look at your page like, ah, Angel, what is happening? So of course, like,
then you start seeing things that make, that reiterate the fact that you're not that good.
And then you know, obviously with Big Brother comes fans. And sometimes the fans go out of the way to tag you like, oh yes, like my this person is better than you. My this person has more deals than you. You internalize those things.
Yes.
Whether we like to believe it or not. So of course, in my perspective, of course there's going to be competition. Not competition because you want to win more than this person. But competition because you want other people
to
validate your experience. I'm like, oh yes, she or he is the winning person. And honestly, I think a lot of us are struggling with that.
Yeah.
Because that's the one thing you struggle with. When you're putting your best and then someone, even though the person is random, they don't know the person. You don't even know if the person has eaten today. They too don't know if you have eaten today. You still want that stranger to validate you somehow. Yeah. And honestly, I think it's the whole human experience.
How does this affect your mental health? Because you're a big advocate for mental health. You've been in and out of depression. Mm-hmm. You speak about it a lot. Life after Big Brother, how did it affect you?
I've gotten to a stage where I have to remind myself to not be scared to speak about my experiences.
Yeah.
Because when I came out of the house, you know, I came out to a lot of, oh, mental health was my strategy. And I'm sorry to say, but...
So people said that?
Yeah. Mm. And in my mind, I'm just like, why would I pander to people? I think that Nigerians have to be the least emotional, intelligent people.
I agree.
And for me, it's a thing of, why would I want to pander to people that I know majority don't understand my experiences? Mm-hmm. And they don't even understand themselves. It might be an experience that they're struggling with, but they don't even know they're struggling with. So they probably think it's a thing of shame. Mm. So for me, coming out, I'm seeing people tag me a mental patient. I went from wanting to speak about my experiences to wanting to shut up so that people would not think that, oh, I'm always sad.
Mm.
Half of the time when I'm tweeting, oh, I found out that this happened, or I'm tweeting about like mental health related issues, I'm tweeting it to give people a safe space, mm, which is exactly why I want to dive into like my mental health blogging and podcasting and everything.
Yeah.
Because like, I have so many experiences that even if we start from now to today,
mm,
we cannot get everything on TV. It's like,
you can try.
It's like I've struggled with so many things growing up, especially as a teenager, that I want to give people the space that I didn't have. So when I came out, some people were like, oh, she's a mental patient, she's always using her mental health as an excuse for this. For me, it's like, one thing I know how to do that I even do too much is take accountability for my actions.
Mm.
Like if I know I've offended you, I'll say it. I won't say it's because I'm depressed or because I'm an accursed. That's why I did it. So to come out and see that, it made me want to go back to the space I was when I was younger.
Mm.
And I was so ashamed to talk about those things. Mm. Like, yes, I'm struggling. But like, aren't we all struggling, yeah, in some shape or some, yeah, form? Like, we are all struggling, and I feel like the society should be more accepting of that. So of course, like sometimes, like there's anxiety going online. I don't want to see someone tag me and be like, oh, she's a mental patient. Mm. I don't want to go online and be like, oh, she deflects using her mental health.
Mm.
I don't want to go online and be like, oh, she's this, she's that, mental health this, mental health that. I want to go online and tweet what I want to tweet in peace, knowing that one, I'm not shading anybody, and knowing that two, I'm just talking about my experiences, and knowing that three, the world should be more accommodating of people that are sensitive. Because,
mm,
I am a sensitive person. Today, I will tweet real hot girl shit. So now, to tomorrow. But I will go into my room
and be,
and I will think about my life.
Yeah.
And I will talk to my friends.
Mm.
And I will crave love. And I'm so grateful for all those that surround me and give me the love that I need.
Mm.
And deep down in me, I know that I'm the softest, most sensitive person in this world. Yes, I'm a hot girl, but that is, yeah, by the side. I'm a hot girl that is very sensitive. So of course, like my mental health has been affected in some capacity or form, in the sense where I got to a stage where I was actually scared to voice out that, you know, that I was struggling. I got to a stage where I was scared to start my mental health blog. It hasn't started until, it hasn't even started though, till now, what, because I'm so scared, like people will think, oh, this is just another one of her antics,
yeah,
or one of her things. When in reality, me, I just really want to help people, because like nobody helped me when I was struggling.
People have been talking even before you got into the house. They're gonna keep talking after, and I mean, we're having a conversation about like sustaining your life after Big Brother just before we got on the show, and you're just telling me things that I could actually relate to, like the anxiety that hits you after the house and trying to sustain your life, too many things that you have to deal with, right? How are you dealing with these things now?
I mean, you know, before, my go-to used to be praying, but when you're pushed into something like this, you actually realize that you don't have much time for praying, or maybe you're too caught up in the rigmarole of all of it, that you actually sit down one day and think, fuck, I haven't prayed today.
Yeah.
And then you even have anger too. Sometimes you wish, like, why did I even get into this anyway?
Do you sometimes regret going to Big Brother?
Yes, I regretted it today as I woke up.
Yeah.
Nothing happened though.
With, yeah.
I just woke up and I was just like, Angel, nobody sends you message.
Well, that thing they do you too.
Yes, it's like, who sent you message? You could have been, I mean, I know I was not in the best places, you know, but I was okay for my age.
Yeah.
I was doing perfectly okay for my age.
Yeah.
And it's, for me, it's just like, nobody sent you. And then there are days where you're grateful, and then there are days where you're just angry at God, like, God, why this?
So, you know, the days where you are not feeling like, oh, why, or the days where you're feeling like, oh, why did I go for Big Brother? Is it because of the fans and the trolling and the people pulling you left to right and center? And do you sometimes feel misunderstood by everybody else except yourself?
Yes, it's a mixture of everything. I will say that out of the Big Brother house, I think I'm definitely, maybe I'm over exaggerating, but I think I have to be the one that is mostly misunderstood. In what's in the, like, I can just tweet something random and somebody will come to me and be like, you're trolling this person. Meanwhile, in my mind, I'm just tweeting to tweet. Half of the time, I actually do not know what's happening on the TL. I just tweet and go, and I come back and I see that people are in my comment section or in my quotes, dragging me, saying that I'm, you know. So, like, there are days where I feel like that, because obviously the trolling will get too much, because sometimes you actually want to go online and have fun, you know.
Yeah.
You want to go online and go back to how it was before Big Brother or before you became somewhat famous. You want to tweet knowing that maybe, like, people will understand, like, your mutuals, because before Big Brother, you have mutuals that when you tweet something, they already know your perspective, where you're coming from, because you choose your following at this point.
Yeah.
But after Big Brother, it's like everything now, they think rather that everything surrounds, you know, you being in the house, your friendships, like, as if before Big Brother, you didn't have any friends prior, or you didn't have any relationships prior. So on some days, like, yeah, I think sometimes the fans have to do with it. You know, adjusting to the industry because you're just thrown in it has to do with it. There's so much anxiety because, like I said, people tell you outside, yeah, new housemates are coming. You want to overcompensate. Even though deep down in your heart, you look at your page.
You've and worked.
Internally, you know that you've worked your hardest and you're trying your best. But you have that knowledge in your head telling you, oh, you have to do harder. And you don't even get to rest. So yes, of course, like, the trolling is a part of it. Like, you just want to have a good day sometimes. Like, let's say you're already struggling and you just come online to laugh now and you tweet something and someone takes it out of context. Or even, you know, brands, like, you want to work and meet the expectations. But the thing about working is that, to be honest, you can never really meet everybody's expectations, to be fair. So you want to do and overcompensate. And you also want to, you know, be the best out there. Like, you want people to be like, oh, in her set or in his set, she's the best or she was the best. So there's now that unhealthy competition. So now you're just going through life anxious, worried. You know, I have worried about a lot of things since I got out of Big Brother. I have been like,
worrying is my food, my breakfast and lunch.
I have been like, Angel, what if you no longer get deals again? What next?
Oh, that's what they do you. I want that.
Angel, what if you don't get any deals again? What next?
Do you know that sometimes I wake up in the morning, right? The devil just sees me to play that morning. You just start like, oh my God, this guy, your life now. You're just stuck. When last did you book anything? What are you doing with your life? And because we're just flipping through pictures on social media, comparison is so easy.
Yes,
you're somebody that's created their life for us, sent, giving us their life in filter and in a nice reel. So we think that, oh, we're not doing as much. And we can just get into a cycle where you're just overthinking and overthinking and you almost become depressed. Crazy, like,
I have asked myself, I'm like, Angel, what next? And I also ask myself, I'm like, well, Angel, you want to write and stuff like that. Okay, Angel, how about you marketing your writing to be profitable? So I always find myself asking myself, what's next? And I won't lie to you, I haven't sat down to be like, Angel, I'm proud of you.
Yeah,
since I got out of Big Brother, and I have achieved so much. I've gotten a house, you know, I've gotten deals,
you have a new. Brand new car.
I've worked with fucking Opel.
I love it.
It's like, Angel, sit down and be like,
count your wins.
Angel, you're doing so amazing for yourself.
Yeah.
I never find myself doing that. I just look at myself like, Angel, there's something else that you're not doing. I could be doing more, you know. haven't actually sat down to be like, Angel, live in the moment and acknowledge that you're just 22. You just turned 22 in February.
You're doing so well.
And you're doing so well for yourself. It's hard to remember that, you know, when you're just pushing to this.
Yeah, I think it happens to all the creatives. And some of us were so attached to, our self-worth is so attached to what we achieve. So when we get a new win, we're okay for the moment. But what's next? Yeah. Because we're attached to our self-worth to it. But I think one of the things that's helped me over time is to practice gratitude. So maybe you can journal and just keep writing all the things that you're grateful for. So that when you're in this state, just revert to it and just probably help you, because trust me, I've been there. That days where it takes my friends to remind me, but you're the one that did this, you're the one that did this, mm-hmm. you're this is doing this. But I was like, but I should be doing more. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Then, so I understand where you're coming from, but I think that that's how you can handle it. Just be more grateful. One of the things I also do is, like, you know me, I'm a Jesus boy. So I ask Jesus for everything. And it's because I got to a point where I was feeling so empty after all the things that I'd done for myself and I've achieved. I just feel so numb and so empty. I was like, oh my God, what's next? So also anxiety was also part of my problem, because I would ask about everything. How you sit on this couch, how the lights will hit your face. I was like, oh my God, these guys, I would panic. I would be shouting. I mean, it's like, oh no, I can't continue in this cycle. So I started doing lots of Jesus. I asked Jesus for everything. How should be, what color of perfume, what, everything I ask God for.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can try that as well.
Yeah.
But what is in the works for you? So you've mentioned podcasting, your writing. You've also done a lot of work with big brands, Oppo, Eyowo, right? Swarovski. So you're a big madam.
Oh, I try
understand?
But
I understand how you feel about your work. So
yeah,
what's next? Like, and when do you want to start? Give us time so that we can, even if you don't do it at the time, because you call you and say, Angel, you're missing something.
Yeah. You know, actually, I just opened like a YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm a lifestyle girl. You know, I like to document like the things that I'm doing. So I'm looking to use my YouTube as a lifestyle content thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that one is just for fun, Sha. I know that YouTube pays, but, you know, it's gradual work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking at releasing a book. Everybody has been asking me when is the book. And for me, it's just like, creative block, please allow me to chill and take my time with it. So that's definitely in the works. I feel like the one that I'm getting into immediately is my podcasting, you know, / talk show. I feel like it just fits me, you know, as a person. You know, I'm really chatty.
Because if you talk, you can talk, I know.
Yeah, I'm open to experiences. I'm not judgy at all. So like, if somebody tells me something now that everybody's like, I just feel like, that's interesting.
Advocates for mental health.
Yes, definitely.
More than ever, especially with the advent of social media, our generation, we're going to be so depressed. We're going to be going through it.
Especially the, you know, people that are out there.
Yes.
It's like, I want us to have conversations that no one is talking about.
Mm.
And even if people are talking about, like, they're talking about it in, like, hush tones.
Yeah.
So that people don't drag them. Mm. And, you know, that's why I want to start the podcast and the mental health blog. You know, I already created like a subscriber's email so that people can, you know, go there and see what's up, you know, because there's so many things that society teaches us to be ashamed of that we shouldn't be ashamed of.
Mm.
Personally, me, it's just Big Brother, like coming out of Big Brother that tried to get me to become ashamed again. Personally, me. I dropped shame.
Don't kill me.
A long time ago.
It's a very powerful place to be. Oh.
I dropped shame a long time ago in terms of like presentation and like saying things that people, like now, people, you know, society teaches people that are assault victims to shut up about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's only now that people are more vocal
about it.
But like me, I would say it's like, not because I want you to pity me, but because yes, I have experienced this.
Mm.
And the shame shouldn't be on me. The burden shouldn't be on me. It should be on the person that assaulted me. Mm. It should be on. So like, I want us to have conversations that people think are not okay to have, because society has trained us that, oh yes, we should carry this thing with us as a thing of shame. No, it's not us. It's not us to feel.
I'm so excited for this because, you know, I've been reading a lot about shame and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brené Brown has a lot of books on it and research. You don't realize how much shame is such a powerful tool.
Yeah.
In terms of our relationships, people who we decide to be with, the things that we decide to do, like, it's crazy. Like, shame is the major reason why people don't feel like they belong, because of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
It's the major reason why some people don't have friends. It's the same.
That's me.
It's this list of things. Some people think that it's big shame. Oh, yeah. Rape and all the other things that yes. assault and everything.
There's also the tiny ones.
I told my friend that, oh, maybe I had an STD and he judged me. So next time I don't want to talk to them.
I don't want to talk to them about
It's just things that you should be able to confide in your friend and the next person because they will also project their shame on you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, like shame is such a huge thing. Like when I first came out of the house, I was like, oh, I unlearned shame when I was 17. Mm-hmm. So many people told me about that, oh, that's why she's the way she is. Mm. I do not mean shame in that sense. I meant shame in the sense where something has happened to me and I'm talking to this person.
Mm.
I don't want the person to carry their own burden or their own projection on me.
Mm.
I'm saying that thing. And if you're uncomfortable with what I have said, even in terms of like STDs, like, you know, people are so scared to tell their friends, oh, I got an STD.
Mm.
Why? Because if, you know, the immediate human reaction is to think, oh, this person is promiscuous.
Yes.
A virgin can have sex today and get an STD because the person that he or she has slept with is not the best, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
So it's like all of those things are the tiny shame that, you know, society like, you know, imbibes in us. And I just need everybody to unlearn it. Even me, I'm still trying to unlearn shame in terms of, you know, like my, you know, friendships, in terms of like my relationships. And this one now with shame, like love shame, because like, as I said, I'm such a soft hearted person and I'm such a lover girl that if they break my heart like this, I'll be in bed listening to Adele.
So, but you know, that's the beauty about life. And I think that woman really helped me, the author, Brené Brown. And I think one of the most powerful things she ever said was, you know, like sometimes we go through life being afraid to be vulnerable because of things that we have been through.
Mm-hmm.
But realize that the moment you shut down vulnerability, you shut down the access to love, because to be loved and to feel like you belong, you have to be vulnerable.
And that's something I struggle with. I hate
being vulnerable. I'm dead too as well. But then again, I'm just like, you know what? So, because what she literally said is that true belonging means that you have to bring your whole self as you are.
As you are.
So, fitting in is what people do in Lagos, where they just come and, oh, this is how I have to talk to fit in this circle. This is how I have to be. I don't have to have this scandal. Oh, they will choose me when I do these things. But the real belonging, that means wholehearted living with your friends and people that you love, is when you actually just present yourself as you are. And I think that's why a lot of Gen Z's fuck with you, because you present yourself as you are, and that's what that generation is about. Shout out to, I feel like I joined Gen Z small, but
I'm not 25 years Gen Z.
Yeah, but I was raised by my granny, so it's hard.
I get what you mean. I feel very old. Sometimes when I talk, people are like, are you sure you're 22? I'm like, yeah, I'm 22. I just grew up with someone really older. But shame is such, and it's such a theme in Nigeria. Like, you know, even me, like, I'm just like, if I see a guy that I like now and we're talking and my brain is just like, Angel, trouble signals. I've just removed myself from that equation because I don't want to hear that I like you or I love you and I'm so fucking in love with you and you don't love me back. I can't die.
Yes. That level of vulnerability kills me.
Yes. And it's just, I don't want to be vulnerable. I don't want to be ashamed. I don't want to feel rejected. So people are like, do you want to get married? I'm just like, no, that's, even though deep down, like if I first want to dance with my mom now, come on, low, I'm out. I've left you guys. Bye bye.
But you know, the people that are most in touch with their vulnerability are the most powerful people.
Yeah.
So it's weak people that we fuck with every other day. Mm-hmm. Even me, I'm one of the weakest ones. If I smell, say you want the overdo, I don't run.
I'm in the middle
because
somehow.
Nobody should use me to do
yoga. I'm kind of like in the middle because like there are days where I'm so strong and I'll tell you, look, oh, I'm in love with you. If you're not in love with me, bye. And there are days where I cannot even open my mouth to be like, I love you.
Yes.
Like, don't come and share me. I'm like, as for bad bitch.
Don't worry, bad bitch is a good song.
Bad bitch is a good song.
Let me fast. Me not be like, see. But yeah, I mean, we're going to do good. I'm very happy that this is where you are. I'm looking forward to all the things that you're going to do going forward. You're such a bright light. I've never had this conversation. I've never had a conversation with you this long, which is highs and hellos, but you're so brilliant. And I'm looking forward to like, the amazing things you're going to do with yourself. And also, I have to say this, and I'm going to say this also with the Gen Zs as well. I think that you guys are the generation that, or we are the generation that's going to break lots of
barriers,
family trauma, causes, different things, emotional heartbreak. We're going to break a lot of things because we are working so hard to be better, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this level of, you know, before now, right? I don't think even the millennials had the audacity to be themselves the way they are now, because Gen Zs are the ones giving them the audacity.
Yeah.
Because Gen Zs apply themselves as they are. We have learned too many things of how to be, how not to be, and that's why people might not understand you, because maybe how you dress and everything, because they've associated that with promiscuity.
Yeah.
But you are showing them that you can be getting your own life, doing well, and still dress as you like and be a bad bitch.
Yeah. That's
shout out to you, Angel.
Shout out.
Cheers to you, Angel, and all the amazing things you're going to do going forward.
Cheers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.